Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. Listen Sundays at 6:30 a.m. on KKOA 107.7 FM or at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. Or to the podcast at lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com. Now here's your host and producer, Sherry Brackett.
Aloha, good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. Today we are again with Jay Ignacio, president of HELCO, Hawaii Electric Light. We had Mr. Ignacio as a guest last in July when we were in the middle of the lava flow, which began on May 4th. And we learned about some surprising and significant challenges which HELCO was facing with the loss of facilities, VOG blanketing much of the solar panels, which were providing way less power, and more. Today, we will find out where HELCO stands now that the lava flow is over, at least as of this moment, and more about the future and some changes pending at HELCO. Just to remind you all, Mr. Ignacio has a long history in the utility business, but he is a Hilo High boy. He got his Bachelor's of Science from the University of Hawaii in Electrical Engineering. Mr. Ignacio is with Lockheed Missiles and Space and with GTE Hawaiian Tel before joining HELCO in 1990. He was manager of transmission and distribution and became president of HELCO in 2008. Good morning. Aloha, Mr. Ignacio.
Good morning, Sharon.
One of the recent times that we talked about the fact that HELCO and actually the Hawaiian Electric Companies are all part of an emergency group of utilities, the Western states, that help each other out in times of disaster. And when we were talking about it, it was in the context of what if HELCO can't get us restored if there's an emergency? And then I never dreamed that HELCO would be called upon to help out on the mainland. But in the California fires recently, you actually sent personnel.
Yes, we did. Sherry, I think you're referring to the Western Mutual Assistance Group. And basically, it's a group of the Western utilities that cooperate together in these emergencies. We meet regularly. We stay in touch with these Western state utilities. In this particular case, when we had the California fires, they actually reached out to us and requested assistance. So the Hawaiian Electric Company sent about 30 personnel to go assist with that emergency. Typically, emergencies are more like approaching hurricanes, so we're not requested to assist. But in this particular instance, there were multiple emergencies across the nation being addressed, and they actually sought out Hawaii resources. I think it's really good because it shows, of course, our aloha to go help others. But it also shows that we're helping others so that when we request help, they're more apt to help us.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. And I read some stuff from some of your folks who had gone there. And even though they were in the middle of people fighting horrendous fires and they were trying to do restoral in really extreme circumstances, they really seemed to feel like they brought the spirit of aloha to those poor folks in California.
They certainly did. And I had conversations with a few of them. They felt for the people who were impacted. They were pretty surprised at the extent of the devastation, I guess, by the fire. And we also learned. We learned from the other utilities present. We learned from the host utility, PG&E, the logistics of them being able to mobilize so many crews, to house so many personnel, to get the materials present, to have safety inspectors on site to make sure that the work is done safely. We didn't just send line personnel. We also sent our personnel who are involved in organizing our emergency response. And I think that was very smart on our part and also very valuable lessons learned.
Very good. Now, Jay Ignacio, we want to talk about where we are with Lower Puna restoration. And I know as of this moment, it doesn't seem like the county of Hawaii has their plans firmly in mind yet. But clearly, power restoration is going to be extremely key. So give us a sense as to where HELCO is now relative to that.
Maybe I'll have to recap the impact. Because of the lava flow, we had about 940 customers in that range impacted, were actually disconnected from the system. And many of those customers, their houses were actually destroyed by the lava flow. So we did restore service to about 150 customers after the lava flow had stopped. But we don't have an exact count as to how many customers are still disconnected from the system and what is needed to restore power. We know of the areas. We know the count is relatively small because so many homes were destroyed by the lava flow.
So you're waiting for the county to decide what the county's going to do?
The challenge is getting access back to these locations. We don't think it's prudent for us to proceed and try to just create our own right-of-ways. So it would make much more sense to do a partnership or a coordinated effort. So we're gonna wait for the county to determine what right-of-ways they're going to create. Even at that, though, it's a challenging question if you have only one or two customers, but you're going to have to spend millions of dollars to restore service back to those customers. Is that prudent? So we may have to look at other alternatives to provide service.
Now, that's an interesting question. If somebody was at the very end of an isolated road, I mean, under normal circumstances, I think you charge the customer to string that additional wire and do all the other things that are required to get power. But this is a little different if they had power before, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But I think the current thinking is that this is almost like a new situation, almost like a new line extension. And it might be on the customer to actually pay for the new infrastructure. In fact, that is what we're doing with PGV.
Puna Geothermal.
We're treating them as a new customer, even if they had service in the past. So they are paying for the infrastructure needed to connect them and provide them with power.
Well, that's kind of interesting. Well, I'm going to wait to the end to ask you the big rate question, because clearly this has to impact our rates. That is tricky.
The lava flow event, you know, we've had lava flows in the past, but not as extensive and not these situations where you have pockets of customers isolated and the county has to expend significant funds into reestablishing rights of ways, roads back. So it's these tough issues that I think we're facing for the first time, you know, the full extent of this kind of impact.
How do you decide if you have some isolated customers, not something big like Puna Geothermal, but isolated individual customers? How is that decision made as to whether to charge them as though they were a brand new non-existent customer versus somebody who'd been with you for years?
Those are policy questions that need to be answered. I think we would have to actually work with the Public Utilities Commission because, you know, what do you do? Because it's a large cost. Do all customers bear the cost to restore service? Or is it fairer to find some other solution for a small number of customers so detached from the main grid?
That's almost like the kind of questions I've been asking of Hawaii County Mayor Harry Kim and the county council members. All of the property taxpayers pay for disaster, whether it's restoration, recovery, and how long do we let people be in clearly hazardous situations that all of us have to pay for? It's challenging, and I actually didn't think of it so much in the line of
yes.
the utility.
And these are difficult questions. I mean, even questions is, say the county or the state creates or relocates housing, then we would be involved in providing service to these relocated homes. Would that be a better, more sensible solution? We haven't come to that conclusion. We haven't resolved those questions with the county just yet, but we're prepared to respond if need be.
You spoke of losing Puna Geothermal. How is the power supply for the Big Island? Because we lost about 30 megawatts of power, I believe, 30 to 38, somewhere in there.
38 megawatts was being supplied by PGV.
So where are we with power supply on the island? Do we have enough?
So to serve the island at its highest use is about 180 megawatts. And we do have enough units or power generation resources to supply that. But PGV with 38, almost 40 megawatts, gave us a larger cushion, a larger margin. So it has been a little more challenging to manage our overhaul schedule, taking a power plant offline so that we can do maintenance. We've had cases where we had to shorten the window where we take out the unit for maintenance, kind of compress the maintenance schedule for that overhaul. So it's making it a little more challenging, but we still have been able to manage the power supply on the island.
You said the demand of the island is around 180 megawatts. My recollection is that's the same power demand as it was prior to the lava flow. Am I right?
It's about that same level.
You know, as we discussed in July, the power demand seemed to be about the same, even though we'd lost a lot of those homes. And you thought at that time maybe it was because of additional air conditioning or whatever, because it seems like our power demand should have gone down, but it hasn't. So what's up with that, do you think?
I think we still are having new customers interconnecting to the system as time progresses. As I described earlier, about 940 customers were impacted, roughly, say, 1,000. But in the meantime, we still have new customers connecting on. I think that plays in the role. And I think, you know, we were talking about the last time we had this conversation, we were trying to look at, were we having more load on the west side because of the VOG issues and air purifiers? I think that played a little bit into it, but we would have to do, you know, kind of thorough analysis to see what this trade-off between additional load, new customers, loss of VOG, all of that. We haven't done that detailed analysis.
Of course, now, in fact, when we spoke in July, you were getting way less power from the west side from solar, rooftop solar, because the VOG was blocking a lot of that. You cannot complain about that now. We've had the most crystal clear days ever since about August 5th. So I'm sure you're getting a lot of solar power in.
So solar power that's connected on customers' rooftop, we have about 100 megawatts connected. And back when we were in the midst of the lava flow and the eruptions and, you know, all of the emissions, I think there were certain days where, I think when you were even in our control area, it was in the order of 40, 50 megawatts. Since then, the highest we had last year was 70. This was post eruption. And the highest this year we have is about 60, mid-60s. So I think there is an increase in the distributed generation output since the lava flow.
I asked you about the adequacy of the power supply on the island, and I understand that there was a two-day power outage to the observatories on Mauna Kea. What was that all about?
The observatories are fed off of one of two transmission lines that transverse between Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea. So what we had installed to try and quickly restore power to the observatory should we have a problem with the line was these remote operated switches, so that typically if you don't have those remote operated switches, you would actually have to have a person drive, you know, from Hilo or from Waimea, drive to the switch, manually open the switch, and then isolate the problem, whether it be a tree branch or a broken pole or a, you know, motor vehicle accident, and restore service, turn back on the transmission line. We've, over the years, installed these remotely operated. We can do it by radio control. Unfortunately, what happened is we were having problems with those switches, and we couldn't do the repairs without actually taking a power interruption to the observatories. Unfortunately, we had to turn off the line for personnel safety in order to make the repairs to the switch, but we minimized the length of the outage. What we had to do is we actually set up all of the work, and what we did is we transferred the power source to the other line that transverses the saddle, had all the switches cut in and set up, and it took us about 4 hours to transfer to the other line. There's a lot of creativity by our engineers and our personnel to figure out to use the other line, the alternate line, to minimize the power interruption. If we had just tried to do it traditionally and stay on the existing line, then we would have multiple outages, and in total it might have taken us 2 days. And we cannot afford to keep our astronomy community out for 2 days. You know, we work with the observatories, with the astronomy community. We have commercial account representatives, service them, stay in touch with them, figured out what is the best time for them to take the power interruption. So all of this was discussed, pre-planned, and then we took the power interruption, which was about 4 hours.
Okay, very good. I just was afraid that this was a sign that our power supply on the island was crumbling.
Oh, no. It's completely unrelated to the generation situation on the island.
And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues, and I'm Sherry Bracken, your host and producer. We're talking today with Jay Ignacio, president of HELCO, and pretty soon we'll bring in Sharon Suzuki, the incoming president of HELCO. Next Sunday morning, we're talking garbage and recycling with Bill Kucharski, who's head of Department of Environmental Management, and George Hidesco, who is the county's recycling coordinator. And that's next Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. COA Country 107.7 FM, 8 a.m. Lava 105.3 FM, and online anytime, lava1053.com and coacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the microphone. Now, let's get back to our discussion today about electricity. Jay Ignacio, as you know, the goal of the state, and certainly the goal, as you have always stated to me, by HELCO, is to have renewable energy, renewable resources, hopefully environmentally friendly resources. Given the loss of Puna Geothermal, which is a renewable resource and is currently completely offline, where are we now with renewable sources?
Unfortunately, we did take a step back with respect to renewable energy with the loss of Puna Geothermal Ventures. You know, prior to the lava flow, Puna Geothermal Ventures was very stable. They've had some problem years with wells where they weren't to their full output. But prior to the lava flow, they were up in the 38 megawatt, and we were even taking up to 40 megawatts of energy from them. The early parts of the year, we were on track to be 63% renewable. You know, the prior year, we were, you know, above 50, and we were on track to do 63, and then the eruption happened. Because of that, we lost the 38 megawatts from PGV, and the number, unfortunately, has dropped down to 28%. But we're still confident that we can get back to where we were and maybe even surpass that. We are working with Puna Geothermal Ventures to see what they need to do to restore, and they are working with the permitting agencies to make sure they're doing restoration of their power plant in the right way. We're pretty confident that we can work through those issues, and if PGV is successful, we can bring them back on and again be in the 63% range. In parallel, we're awaiting Honuaʻola, or Huhonua as it was formerly known, to come online. They're estimating to come online in the March timeframe. That'll add in the order of 10%.
Now, even with all their recent problems of unexpected discharge of really bad, icky water, they're still on target?
We're going by the projections they provide to us, and they're saying by end of March, they can build the plant, have the plant ready to run. There's still, you know, the issue of the Supreme Court case that they need to resolve. Those are all open issues, but in terms of physically constructing the plant, their new target date is the end of March.
Many people have asked how it is that a facility that will burn trees is environmentally friendly, truly renewable, such as geothermal or solar. So remind us why Huhonua fits the bill as renewable.
First of all, it's defined as renewable in our state statutes. So we consider it as part of our renewable portfolio. The concept for biomass is that you are actually burning trees, but you're also replanting. So you have a carbon recapture, that burning and recapture of carbon cancels out, and then you have a net renewable resource. Carbon recapture is the crux of this Supreme Court case.
So are there other new renewable resources that HELCO is looking at?
We just submitted applications to the Public Utilities Commission to get approval for two more photovoltaic plus storage, totaling 60 megawatts. Two separate projects, 30 megawatts each. And that will even take us further. We'll probably be beyond 75%, in the order of 75% with all of these projects coming back online.
That's pretty exciting. Where are these large-scale solar facilities going to be?
They're in the Waikoloa area. Part of the strategy is to build it near transmission lines, so it's near some of the transmission line facilities.
As you recall, there was a plan to put a large-scale solar plant down in Ocean View, and there was enough public outcry that that project never went forward. How confident are you that you can get what you need for the Waikoloa area?
You know, part of our agreement with these developers is they need to do public outreach. They need to have a component of working with the public, hearing the public and making sure that they're taking public consideration in the formation and the construction of their project. So that's one way we want to assure that the public is taken care of, and then we reduce the risk of these projects running into, you know, opposition and not getting built. As far as the projects down near South Point in Hawaiian Ocean View, we still have a docket before the Public Utilities Commission that needs to be resolved. And the docket is not so much the project itself, but the substation that will interconnect the project. So I think the project has all of the approvals. It's the substation that we need to get approved.
Yeah, well, you know, if people want truly renewable energy, we're going to have to put up with what it takes to happen. And it's either going to be a big oil-fired plant like the one across from Kona Airport, or it's going to be something else, right?
It's certainly trade-offs, right? We all want renewable energy. We want to use renewable energy to lower costs. That's part of our strategy. But then you're going to have the element of the community that may not agree with your plans, may not agree with the particular project. So we as a utility, the developers, we need to be sensitive to those concerns and try to accommodate them as much as possible. In the end, we may not have 100% agreement, but decisions need to be made whether we're going to proceed forward or not.
Well, as you and I discussed before we even went on air, sometimes leadership means doing what you have to do.
That is true. I mean, that's what the community, our customers depend on us to do, to take in the facts, to take in the considerations from the community and make those tough decisions. You know, many times what we do as the utility is not popular, but it's not like we discount what people are saying, we discount our customers' concerns. It's looking at all of the factors, listening to people, and then making a decision and have to move forward. We can't stay status quo. We can't stay the same going forward if we want to attain our goals of 100% renewable.
Right. And that's the thing. You know, right now, many utilities, and certainly this one, still relies a lot on oil. And that's what we're trying to not rely on. But what about natural gas? There's been a lot of questions about whether natural gas can be a part of the portfolio, maybe even temporarily here on the island. I know in 2016 when HECO talked about adding natural gas, they talked about customer savings and reducing dependence on oil. Natural gas, is that something that applies or can apply to the Big Island?
We've had the belief, and probably still do have the belief, that the use of natural gas in the interim until we can get to 100% renewable can lead to customer savings. The challenge now is we've lost time, right? The strategy was to use natural gas as an interim fuel until we get to 100%. Well, we've lost, you know, all the years between when we first proposed it to now. So the longer we proceed, the less likely that strategy makes sense.
Why was it not approved? I don't remember.
It was a core strategy with NextEra. We had jointly made that proposal. In fact, it's in the commission's inclinations to look for alternative fuels that could lower costs. So we thought we were aligned. The governor did not agree with that strategy at that time, and the NextEra proposal to purchase Hawaiian Electric was not approved. So since then, because of the desires and the guidance of our government, we have not pursued natural gas.
Rate increase. You just asked for a rate increase. Give us a sense as to why. Because, of course, with the loss of all the facilities in Lower Puna, there's obviously a concern that our rates are going to go up. And I don't know if that's why you're asking for a rate increase or there are other factors.
It is in part what happened in Lower Puna. When you asked earlier, you know, basically, how are you keeping the lights on when you don't have PGV? Part of that strategy or the actions we're taking is we're running more of our units. We're running Hamakua Energy Partners more. So in running more of our units, we're going to have to staff. Our strategy while PGV was on was to keep the units, primarily one of our steam plants, the one in Puna, keep the units, but only staff it and operate it when need be, which was occasional, and staff it with the overtime of the existing workforce. Now that PGV is not available, we have to full-time staff it. So we are and have hired people. So there is a component of not having PGV, the eruption, leading to higher costs. So that's part of the increase, but you know, it's not the full driving force. basically our rates, there's two parts. There's the cost of fuel and the cost that we pay independent power producers. And then there's all of the other costs, the cost to read your meters, the cost to build, the cost to maintain the poles and wires, to cut the trees. That's another component. It's kind of a fixed component. The fuel component is adjusted monthly. Every month, we look at what we spent on fuel. We look at what we spent on paying for energy for independent power producers. And we make an adjustment. And your rates are adjusted monthly. What we're requesting is a review of the entire package, both fuel and all of the other costs. But the impact will primarily be all of the other costs. And there's a very thorough review of all of the other costs of, you know, how much are you spending on vegetation management? Do you really need the additional staffing for the power plant in Pune? We're also looking at enhancements in our operations. So we're actually looking at additional staffing for being able to respond quicker to power interruptions. All of that gets reviewed. When we filed with the Public Utilities Commission, our estimate was a 3.4% increase, which was about $8.
You mean $8 per customer?
$8 for our what we call a typical residential customer using 500 kilowatt hours. For example, just this month, if you look at the adjustment for the fuel, which is the other component that I talked about, we have a $12 reduction in the customer's bill related to reduction in fuel prices. So you can kind of see relative our request, which gets a lot of attention, a lot of scrutiny, versus the monthly adjustment that can swing even higher than our rate request.
Yeah, I noticed that on my own bill.
Yes.
It's like, wait a minute, we use less energy, yet we're paying more.
Yes.
Sorry, that's just me.
And that's what happens. People don't understand the full process for adjusting rates. So they may get the perception, wait a minute, you're already increasing rates. Why are you asking for another rate increase? And they get confused with increase in rates related to increasing fuel prices. And then we come in with a, you know, formal announcement that we're increasing rates that is primarily all of the other things other than fuel.
Jay Ignacio, the first time I interviewed you was back in 2009, not long after you became president of HELCO. And we've had many opportunities to talk since then, sometimes for Island Issues, as we're doing now, sometimes for stories for Hawaii Public Radio. And today is a little bit bittersweet because this is the last time I'm going to interview you as president of HELCO because you are retiring at the end of January. Is that correct?
That is correct. My official retirement date will be February 2nd, but my last day at work will be January 25th. So this is probably our last radio interview for me as a president of Hawaii Electric Light Company.
Can I interview you as a private citizen?
Sure, you can do that.
Okay, so I was going to ask you, what are you going to do February 1st? But I guess I need to ask you, what are you going to do February 3rd?
I'm going to take time off. I'm going to work on things that I've procrastinated over the years. You know, I've been focused on utility business for almost 30 years. I haven't done much on my property. I want to try and see if I can do some of the things I had in mind, you know, growing some of my own food and finishing the fencing on the lot, that kind of thing. And then still stay involved with some of the community service organizations that I'm linked to. I'm not going to let go of that. I'm still going to be part of the community.
What are your reflections about HELCO and your time with HELCO as you say aloha?
You know, I was just talking to one of our directors in the company who's been with us for a long time. I started in 1990. And we're having a conversation about what we did when we first came. In 1992, you know, we had those rolling blackouts. That was a difficult time. But in parallel with building our generation, we rebuilt almost our entire transmission and distribution system. You know, we spent almost 30 years rebuilding that. And I think people, if they don't understand that part of the business, if they weren't involved, they don't have a full appreciation for how much work and how much progress we've made. The next step, and I think we're in a very good place with the projects that we have coming online, these new photovoltaic and battery storage projects, puts us in a really good place to make the next step with the infrastructure we built. And now moving to renewables. I think we're in a very good place. We kind of set the table to do that. But I was talking to our operations director. What I was telling her, Lisa Dangelmeyer, I think you know Lisa, is we've invested all of this. We need to make sure that when we progress to this level of renewables from a technical standpoint, and not many people will understand this, we don't want to undo all the work that we've done, because we could put technologies in that would render the improvements that we've made. We've rebuilt all of the communications, all of the protective devices we put in. We put it in for a reason, to stabilize the system. We don't want to proceed and throw caution out the door and then render our system unstable again because we can't operate with this level of renewable. So we're in a good place. I think we've got good proposals. We've got a good plan. We're executing on the power supply improvement plan. We're not just talking about it. We're executing on it. So the next progression, the next 30 years, is probably going to be just as interesting and just as challenging as the past 30.
And you'll be watching it from the outside.
I'll be watching, cheering, maybe... You know, people may call me for advice or opinions. I don't know.
Well, I just want to thank you, Jay Ignacio, for always being available and answering the hard questions when I had them, and also for explaining things in English language terms that people like me, who are not people like you, could understand. But I'd also like to mention that Hawaii Electric Light Company is not being left leaderless with your departure. And we are also joined today by Sharon Suzuki, who currently is the president of Maui County's Electric Company and will be additionally adding to it the responsibility for HELCO here on the island. And Sharon is with us today. She's been with Maui Electric, the Hawaiian Electric Companies, for about 25 years in a lot of different kinds of roles. Sharon Suzuki, aloha and welcome.
Aloha, Sherry. Thank you for having me on your program.
Well, I'm glad to have you transitioning with Jay so that you can hear everything Jay said. So next time you and I talk, you'll know what I asked him and what he said. What thoughts would you like to share with us as the incoming head of HELCO?
I guess I'm excited to learn more about how we can build upon the foundation that Jay has over the last 10 years as president of Hawaii Electric Light. And it's just great to hear that he's helped prepare the infrastructure on island with his technical background. I'm coming at it now from the customer service side, where I started at Hawaiian Electric developing energy efficiency programs. So, of course, energy efficiency is the first thing that all our customers should do before installing rooftop solar or generating their own energy. And I'm excited to bring that focus because I think I have a lot to learn. I've been working with Jay since last month, in December, transitioning and meeting with some of our community stakeholders and the employees. And I have a lot to learn, but I think what I bring is that I believe that the community and the customer perspective is very, very important moving forward with all of these projects that he talked about, because I think we know it's not just for utility projects, but community members and the public want to have a say or want to know what's going on in their neighborhoods. I believe that just kind of reminding our team, I mean, they do care so much about the communities they serve and they have so much technical knowledge, and I think we just need to bring our team out to the communities and listen to their concerns and try to address them before we just move forward with these projects, and working with the developers and our partners to make sure that they share that same philosophy.
Ms. Suzuki, you are currently head of Maui Electric, and you'll be retaining that title and taking on HELCO as an additional responsibility. And that sounds like a job for two people, but you're one. How are you going to incorporate the HELCO work into your existing work? How can you do all of that?
Of course, I don't do it all by myself. And I've met with the directors, and they're very, very capable. They're experienced veteran leaders. I will have to rely on them a lot more. And of course, I have a similar team on Maui, and we serve, of course, Maui, Molokai, and Lanai. So I think I'm used to traveling to our different islands. Adding one more is not as big a deal, I think, as people may think, because it's not doing all the work myself, it's helping to lead these very talented leaders to help us better serve the communities that we work in, right? And my commitment is to be on Hawaii Island at least twice a week so that I'm available for meetings in person. But of course, I'd like to learn about the community and meet the people by also getting involved in the community service projects that HELCO sponsors, as well as community service events that many nonprofits do for fundraising. And I think through that, which is what I've done in Maui County, I can get to learn and be part of the community here.
Very good. Well, we look forward to additional conversations with you. Thank you, Sharon Suzuki, so much for being here. Aloha.
Aloha.
And Jay Ignacio, thank you so much for being here. I will see you around town. Aloha.
Aloha.
And to our listeners, thank you very much for being here. This is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. I'll see you next Sunday morning for another Island Issues. Until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues, brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us at info@labo105.com. Join us again next week for another Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Island's Mahalo Multimedia.